I'm sorry, my brain is not making sentences.
It's okay, this movie barely made any sentences.
Your Moment of Who.
Hello, and welcome to Your Moment of Who. This is Casey.
This is Sue.
And today we are talking about the Eighth Doctor with the one and only Doctor Who movie.
Yes.
It is very different from what we have been exposed to in our own fandom and in exploring the older history, but it stands out.
It is definitely a thing that exists.
It exists in time. So this was actually meant to kickstart an American-Canadian version of Doctor Who. It was meant to reboot the series in a way, but it just didn't happen.
Or perhaps be a joint production going forward? I'm not really sure about that.
Yeah, me neither.
I watched some of the special features about the making of this, and it seems like it was very troubled through the whole process. But the interesting thing to me that they said at the very beginning of this, it's called The 7-Year Hitch, and it's like a little, almost documentary. It's almost an hour long.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who made this were saying that they feel like, you know, the Sylvester McCoy era was failing because the BBC style was still stuck in their older, like, more theatrical style of television. And at this time period, you know, Star Trek The Next Generation had just started in America. They actually cite that. And there was just a very different style of big-budget science fiction. So that's why they decided to make this a joint production between the BBC and America and Canada to sort of, like, update Doctor Who into what was happening with science fiction at that time on television.
It was not a good idea!
I mean, the reasoning makes sense, I suppose. But no one should have let Americans touch Doctor Who, it seems.
No! They don't get it! We just didn't get it! And you can tell by watching this movie!
Where ya? Spoilers.
What?
These books are from your future. You don't want to read ahead, spoil all the surprises. Not peeking at the end.
Isn't travelling with you one big spoiler?
I try to keep you away from major plot developments. Which, to be honest, I seem to be very bad at.
Considering the fact that this series started in 1963 by a woman and a varied ethnic sort of culture, and then you have the Americans come in and it's just like, oh, let's represent. They have, like, racist jokes and pretty.
Yeah, I mean, the series as a whole throughout its history has generally been considered to be pretty progressive.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much this movie.
Oh, not this movie at all. In fact, we were just talking about the scene that stuck out to me at the very beginning of this film that kind of told me that this was not going to go the way I was hoping it would. The Asian gang. And one of them did a karate kick high five.
Just what?
Really? You're going to do that?
A lot of things about this TV movie are very American. The gangs and the gun violence.
Most of the cast.
Well, yes. And, of course, the kissing.
Yeah, the forced love story. In this movie, her boyfriend had just left her because she's a doctor and she's on call, and apparently he has an issue with that because they had a date at the opera, and all of a sudden he moves out. Turns out he owned most of the furniture, and all of a sudden she and the doctor are kissing and she's totally cool with it. It's like, you just broke up with your boyfriend that day!
Also, who is this boyfriend who is dating a doctor on call and gets upset that she has to go in and try and save someone's life? Who is that guy? Like, that's not cool.
It's not. That should have been pretty clear cut within the first 3 months of their relationship. You don't move in with somebody if you can't handle their very busy doctor lifestyle and the fact that they might be on call. Don't go to the opera when you're on call!
So then, of course, in the new series, when it came back, I guess the kissing stuck around and the doctor became a romantic being. So the new show creators must have kept that piece of the canon, but nobody seems to be sure whether they're keeping this whole half-human business.
Yeah, people are really confused about that. I mean, I think Russell T. Davies before has said that the Eighth Doctor movie is canon, and he appears in Night of the Doctor, so he's
definitely canon.
Yeah, he's canon, but the whole half-human business, fans are just like, oh, we don't think that's canon, and then other fans say, well, if the Eighth Doctor is canon, then it must be canon that he's half-human, and it's just very confusing. It's a very confusing ordeal.
Well, you know, in 50 years of a show, it's going to contradict itself every now and then.
Exactly.
At least. But it's a major plot point of this movie. So, like, the Master opens the Eye of Harmony by using the human eyes of Lee, Chung Lee. Right? Mm-hmm. It is Chung Lee, right? Like the Street Fighter character.
You mean that Asian child?
Yes. So the Master opens the Eye of Harmony because and is able to do that because Lee's eyes are human. And that's how he finds out that the Doctor is half-human, because it would recognize his eyes. You can't have this story without this supposed fact that the Doctor is half-human. But then, in Journey's End, like after the whole meta-crisis, I can't believe I'm trying to logic this out, the Doctor shows such great disgust realizing that one of him is part-human. I think he even says, that's disgusting.
Yeah.
And if he's already half-human, that wouldn't bother him so much. Also, Donna says that he's just a Time Lord, but her little bit of human is what made her more of a genius.
Yes.
And it's clear also from that episode that a human Time Lord hybrid is not to be taken lightly, because he'll either become mortal and have one heart, or her brain will explode.
Yeah.
So nobody knows what to do with it. But there's a quote from Russell T. Davies, who was the show director at the time of Journey's End, so he certainly dealt with it then, that he says, I don't like the half-human thing. He certainly isn't half-human, but it's less interesting to say it simply doesn't count. I always wanted to put in a line where someone says to the Doctor, are you human? And the Doctor says, no, but I was once in 1999. It was a 24-hour bunk. Part of the reason I never put that in was it was a bit too self-referential. But also, I thought I'm spoiling the TV movie if I do that. In that time, like it or not, the Doctor was half-human. Everything in that story says he was half-human, so you can't not count it. I don't think we can ignore it.
He has a point.
So he says we can't ignore it, but then he does.
Honestly, wouldn't you want to try to ignore this movie? It's not bad. It's
weird.
It's very bizarre. I just finished it the morning of this recording. And I'm still trying to work through my feelings on it, because there are parts that are good. Paul McGann is amazing.
That's the thing. I don't want to ignore the movie because I like Paul McGann so much.
Paul McGann was really good. And the design of the interior of the TARDIS was pretty nice. It had that kind of gothic feel going for it, and it kind of matches his Doctor. But at the same time, usually the Doctors rebuild their interiors, and it was just kind of set before regeneration even came in.
We didn't see a whole ton of it, but
I was upset that there wasn't enough TARDIS, actually.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it looked like they rebuilt the TARDIS set in a giant warehouse, or possibly stuck the control room in the middle of, like, somebody's lounge or library.
Yeah.
Which was odd to me.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't really see the inside of the TARDIS during greatest show in the galaxy, right? So,
yeah,
who knows? It may have looked like that then, and maybe I'm just wrong based on what I'm used to now.
Yeah. Also, this movie required me to take a 24-hour break from it because I watched the first 10 minutes and Sylvester McCoy gets shot. That's very traumatizing.
He doesn't, like, even get shot in a confrontation. He walks out of the TARDIS and is shot by gangs.
It was just not nice. You don't do that to Sylvester McCoy. It's not nice.
I really want to know, in the time that this movie was made, in like 94, 95, 96, did every other country in the world just think that American cities were full of gangs and gun violence and that was it? And if the answer to that is yes, do you still think that? I'm just curious.
One other thing that I do like about this movie, I kind of like that despite the fact that it was made and released in 1995, 1996, that it was set in the future. It was set around 1999, which that was kind of a scary time, the mid to late 90s, because we didn't know what was going to happen in 2000. I mean, a new millennia, and we were scared of Y2K.
Yeah, I'm kind of a sucker for sci-fi stories that make fun of what we're actually afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
With everybody who was freaking out about Y2K, like, any story that's like, yeah, the world actually did end that night, except for this time traveler.
Yep.
And it's so ridiculous, but I still really enjoy it.
Yeah. Going back to some of the ridiculous, since we just got the good parts out of the way.
There were some other good parts.
There were other good parts, but let me go back to the ridiculous ones.
Okay.
So Grace is at the opera when she's on call, right? Which is just a bad idea in general. She should have been home watching TV if she was on call.
Well, yeah.
And
especially, excuse me, especially in a city riddled with gang violence.
Yes. She has to leave, and you see her running down the hospital corridor in her opera gown, which is very beautiful. It's a beautiful shot. But she goes into surgery with the opera gown on, and I'm like, okay, not a lot of time to change. I get that. She's kind of bringing in other things with the opera gown, but whatever. And then the doctor flatlines, and she's like, no! And then they ask Cheng Li to come in and talk to her. She's still in her freaking opera gown! You don't have time to change? They don't have doctor scrubs there for you to put on? I'm sure the corset is uncomfortable by now.
Yeah, I'm not sure why she didn't change into scrubs. It's not like it would have taken very long.
And it would have given her some time to process the fact that she lost a patient. I don't know. Being upset about something like a patient flatlining, it requires you to get into something a little more comfortable than an opera gown with a corset on and a big bustle.
She treated that like it was the first time it ever happened to her.
Yeah.
Which, how is that even possible? But also, I don't understand why she would be losing her job for losing a patient. Like, clearly there was weird anatomy going on there.
Yeah.
No one, apparently they didn't tell her about the strange x-ray, even though I remember them telling her about it.
Yeah. It was weird. This is when research is required for you to write a story. I don't think the writers really thought this through. Also, the master's a snake.
A ghost snake.
Master's a ghost snake!
Why thought, does the master have superpowers?
I don't know! Although he doesn't have the hypnosis superpowers anymore. Instead, he's just a snake.
That's right, he possessed Grace with the goo that he spat at her, not his mind control abilities.
Yeah. That doesn't make any sense. So, I guess that's canon too. Also, sure. The fact that the master was played by Eric Roberts was pretty funny to me. I'm like, okay, Julia Roberts' brother, and he was in a sitcom that I used to watch. So, I was familiar with Eric Roberts, and the fact that he played the Master with an American accent, okay. Wouldn't you figure that if the Doctor remained British, wouldn't the Master remain British too? Or no, does that just go away when he possesses somebody?
The Master crawled into the human's body. It was very Men in Black, like how he was peeling his skin off and stuff.
It was very Men in Black. And then the Master comes across Lee, threatens his life, and then says, oh, the Doctor stole my body, and he's a bad man, and I'll give you everything that you want. And Lee's just like, oh, you threatened my life, but okay, cool.
Right?
We're besties! And then, at the very end, when the Doctor said, listen, he just admitted to saying that he wasted his lives, Lee's just like, you lied to me! And I just thought, really? You're just catching on? You're a moron.
Also, the Doctor goes back in his own time stream.
Yeah, what's that about? And he's revealing bits about the future for other people?
Apparently,
saying, oh, answer this.
Apparently, according to the TARDIS data core, that is a trait of the Eighth Doctor, like, throughout his audio and comics and novels, is that he will regularly, I guess, give people hints about their future without divulging details.
Interesting.
Which seems strange to me. Like, I didn't realize that any other incarnation of the Doctor could necessarily see into the future.
I know, right? Wouldn't that be difficult for a half-human?
I mean, he said something about, like, seeing all of time, but I thought that was only when he looked into the something-something. Okay, I found it. So it first happens when Rose has looked into the time vortex, or is infused with the power of the time vortex, and she says, I can see everything, all that is, all that was, all that could be. And the Ninth Doctor says, that's what I see all the time. And then, even a little bit later in the fires of Pompeii, the Tenth Doctor tells Donna that he can perceive the past, present, and all possible futures simultaneously. But mm-hmm. I guess it's only the Eighth Doctor that decides to play fast and loose and warn people about things?
I don't know. Also, the Eye of Harmony was weird.
Yes.
That seemed like a prop from, like, one of those Nickelodeon game shows.
Yeah, okay, like the Aggro Crag.
like Legends of the Hidden Temple?
Yes, okay. What's funny was, again, in that little special feature documentary, they said the first drafts of the script had a very Indiana Jones feel.
Oh, I can tell.
And for a while, Spielberg was even, like, associated with the project. But he kept not liking the script and saying that he had, you know, explored this whole Indiana Jones universe enough, and eventually was like, I don't want to be associated with this anymore.
Nor should you be, sir. But then he just kind of allowed it to happen with Indiana Jones 4. Anyway, there is one cameo, or one small part, that I really like. And there's an actor named Will Sasso.
Yes.
He plays the mortician, or the pathologist, and he's just the best!
He is the snarkiest.
He's amazing! His line readings were amazing! I kind of wanted him to be the central character alongside of the Doctor.
Well, he's in a ton of comedies.
Oh, yeah.
A ton.
Yeah, I fear that this is probably one of his first jobs or something. Like, it was almost 20 years ago!
Yeah, it's early. His first, yeah. According to IMDb, his first job was in 91 in TV series called Neon Rider.
Sure. Yeah, so this is early in his career. Wow.
You know what I did appreciate, though, was, once again, the references to previous Doctors. I don't know why the scarf showed up in somebody's locker at the hospital.
But I know!
I did enjoy that the Doctor kept offering jelly babies to everybody, and that Americans were like, what is this? Like, every American that took a jelly baby, like, sniffed it and bit off the head and was like, oh, this is kind of awesome.
You know that this is pure fiction and the writers did not do their research when there's a scene with a cop eating a jelly baby instead of tasing the person who just offered him a jelly baby.
Right. But he didn't, he hadn't gone back to the TARDIS yet, right? So where did the jelly babies come from?
I don't know. I mean, he was naked in the hospital. Where did he get the jelly babies?
I don't know.
Okay, we also have to talk about that scene where he regenerates.
That was weird.
That was the weirdest. And this is one of the things about the 90s that I really wish to forget. The whole amnesia subplot of many, many a movie or a TV show. Oh my God, what? He goes into this room that was filled with broken gurneys and broken mirrors and stuff. And why didn't the hospital clean that up? That's
Don't
just
forget the doll heads.
There were doll heads in there.
Yeah, there were.
Arms outstretched holding a sheet, and then he curls it in on himself like he's in a 1980s video and he's a bird.
Well, didn't you hear it was the anesthesia that prevented the regeneration something something techno babble?
I don't care. There always does seem to be something going wrong with a regeneration, though. Mm. I mean, when the ninth regenerated into 10, because of the whole time vortex thing, he kind of passed out, and then with the 11th Doctor, he couldn't control the TARDIS, and then,
because
and you know,
he didn't
with
want to go
exactly, and with the 5th Doctor regeneration, he just turned into an asshole, and just something always going wrong. We love you, Colin Baker.
I also read in trying to delve into this half human business, I've been reading a lot of wikis today, and the TARDIS wiki also mentions that 8 is unique in that 7 actually was dead before regeneration, and when 8 regenerates into the War Doctor, he also dies first.
Mm-hmm.
Usually they don't, they regenerate instead of dying.
Right.
But on both ends of 8's reign, he dies and then regenerates.
Yeah, and the whole thing with the 1996 regeneration, because there's usually a bright light either
yeah
over the body or exuding from the body nowadays. But in this, it's like lightning, and they juxtaposed it with footage from Frankenstein.
And weird facial expressions.
It was the weirdest.
It was odd.
I felt so bad for Sylvester McCoy. And Paul McGann. And also the TARDIS ate the Master, apparently.
Yeah. The Master has died so many times, but he keeps coming back, what with his superpowers.
I don't understand how he was eaten by the TARDIS! Like, previous Masters, yeah, I get it, they died and stuff, but he was eaten by the TARDIS!
Well, it gave the TARDIS indigestion.
Exactly! Oh. Meaning that he was digested. Also, the Master was dressed up like a Terminator.
Well,
that's something to point out.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, no, he, at one point, changes to the long leather jacket, and it's definitely,
and he has the sunglasses and
Terminator-esque,
all black
and the slicked back
yeah
hair.
Yeah,
Let's steal from every popular movie of the last few years.
And the ending was weird, too. Because they tried to make it sad that they were parting. But we're so used to people wanting to leave with the doctor. And Grace is just like, no, I'm not going with you. You can stay with me. You don't want to? Oh, okay. One last chaste kiss. Goodbye.
She still doesn't get it.
She doesn't.
But I do love Paul McGann's curly long hair.
I do too. He's very handsome in this movie. So anything else about this really crazy movie? Like anything that really stands out?
I liked the very beginning.
The very beginning was really good.
Like before they shoot Sylvester McCoy.
I just like that beginning part in the TARDIS.
Yeah, yeah.
Where Seven is just reading.
And his 900-year diary and his jelly babies reading the time machine. Like, it's kind of cute.
That's the best sort of evening. And he has a gramophone, and it's very vintage, and I love it. Then he gets shot. That was really traumatizing for me. Also, I did think it was kind of cool that Lee, when they were in the ambulance, just put in John Smith. Like, no prompting.
Yeah.
He was like, his name is John Smith. Everyone unconsciously knows that the doctor's alias is John Smith.
I mean, what else would it be?
Apparently Dr. Bowman. Grace.
Yeah, where did that even come from?
I don't know. Wouldn't it be more appropriate for 11? You're right, I'm funny! Yeah. I'm so funny, because bow tie man, Bowman.
You weirdo.
So, I guess that wraps it up.
It.
Yeah. And then, the next time we have a moment of Who, Doctor Who will be back!
Capaldi! The Series 8 premiere is the 23rd of August. Dragon Con is the following weekend, and then we're into the beginning of September. So expect the first regular Moment of Who to be sometime in early to mid-September for Series 8. We're quite excited.
We are. I mean, we have our complaints about recent seasons, but it doesn't mean we don't love the show.
Oh yeah, it doesn't mean I don't want more of it.
Yeah. We hope you've enjoyed this fun little foray into Classic Who. If you want us to do more in the future, like during a Doctor Who hiatus, which is sure to come about, let us know. I mean, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm very glad we did this. This was a very good time, at least for us, if not for you.
Yeah. I think we brought a fresh perspective to these episodes. Because some of them did not age gracefully.
No.
But we still love them.
Yes.
All right. That wraps it up. This is Casey.
This is Sue.
And this has been your Moment of Who.
Now pass me the neutron ram.
Oh, no. Not again.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z @gmail.com. Or you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-4335. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly Supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. That's anomalypodcast.com. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Say that three times fast.
One of them, in something called Magic in the Water, he's credited as Shy Young Orderly. I choose not to investigate.